Interesting. Okay. All right. So we are holding on Mempavlov and Bayes, the second line, the wide line. Okay. So we said in the Mishnah that there are six things that have to be had in mind when a korban is being shechted, and a korban tosfos at the beginning of the sefer, maybe by all the other avodas as well. And among them was l'shem devach, that you have to have in mind which korban it is. Hello? No. And what happens all the other times when you're here alone? But I say I only have.
No, not with Alexander.
No, come on. Especially we're late now.
No, we're not late.
Here we are.
Because I wasn't here.
Okay. No.
Essentially, we're not late.
Okay.
Now tell me what you were sharing.
No, not Second, I was sharing what was starting on the second line of the wide lines of Membavah Mabez. We learned in the Mishnah that one of the things that second line of the wide lines, Membavah Mabez. We said that there are six things you have to have in mind when you're offering a korban. One of them is L'shem Zevach, that you have to have in mind which korban it is. And as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, if you have in mind a different korban, that can make it possible completely, or at least that it doesn't count for the owner. Mm-hmm. So, if a person shechts a chatas, having in mind that it's an ola, then it's possible, as we learned, because the chatas is one of the korbanos, the other one being the korban Pesach, where Shinui Hashem makes it possible. But l'shem chulin, but if you had in mind that it is not any korban at all, but rather that it's chulin, shera, then it is kosher.
What is kosher?
The korban is kosher.
If you have in mind
that it's not a korban at all, but rather that it's chulin, then it's kosher.
Rav Eliezer says
on the side. Why does Rav say that? Because Pasuk says v'lo yichalalu es kodshe b'nei Yisrael. The simple meaning of the pasuk is it's a warning to the kohenim, don't profane the kodshim of the Jewish people by eating them b'tumah or by having the wrong thoughts or whatever. However, the word loy in Torah can also mean a negation. It can also mean, besides being a statement, don't do such and such, it can also be a statement of fact, it does not do such and such. But loy yichalalu es kodshim b'nei Yisrael,
they will not.
There is this. They, meaning something else that is not kodshim, is not able to be mechalal the kodshim of Bnei Yisrael. Meaning that we learn from that, kodshim, mechalal, and kodshim, a thought of one kind of korban can be mechalal, can tassel a different korban, so having in mind that it's an ola when really it's a chatas, that in chulin, mechalal and kodshim, but a thought of it being chulin does not tassel it as kodshim. V'lo yichalalu, they, meaning things that are not kodshim, are not able to be mechalal kodshim.
But they're not yet kodshim.
That's the point. In other words, having in mind that it is kolin rather than kodshim does not possible. It's only having in mind that it's a different type of kodshim that can possible.
Oh, one second. Are you talking about the shechet?
We mean that if a chatas is shechted and the shechet has in mind that it's not a chatas, he has in mind that it is kolin, that it is still kosher. In fact, we learned
not the owner.
Anybody can shecht.
It doesn't matter what the owner thinks.
We said in the Mishnah, and we're going to learn in the Gemara, we're going to have a different opinion in the Gemara, but the halacha is that it doesn't matter the owner's machshava. We're talking about the machshava of the person who's shechting it. So actually, we learned this all the way back at the beginning of the Masechta, that we pointed out over there, we have this din, that shechatas shechta l'shem oil of psula l'shem chulin kshera, and we discussed over there the pros and cons of it. Why should that be? Why should we say, indeed, that kodshim machal and kodshim, but chulin are not machal kodshim? So we had a sugya about that all the way at the beginning of the Masechta. Here we're just saying briefly that's what it is. However, Masiv Rabba, but Rabba asks on that, we say in our Mishnah, Amr Abyasi, ask me shalahu v'libu l'shem echad mikol eru, even if somebody did not have in mind any of these six things that we said in the Mishnah, kosher, the korban is still kosher, true t'nai beistin, because we say the beistin made a t'nai that don't say these things or don't think these things explicitly, because you may come to say or think the wrong thing. If you have to say, for example, this is a chatas, you may mistakenly say that it's an ola and passel it, and same thing with the other ones, implying time shalahu v'libu klal. Why is Rabbi Yossi saying that it's kosher? Because he didn't have anything particular in mind. Which seems to imply that if he did have in mind that it was chulin, then it would be possible. So what is it? So Rav is saying that apparently that the korban is completely kosher. But from the implication of the Mishnah, it seems like it would be kosher. It seems like it would be possible, right? Amalei Abayas. Abayas says no. Maybe what the Mishnah means to imply is that if he did not have anything in mind, then the korban is not only kosher, but it's merasa. It actually counts for the owner's chiyuv. But maybe the implication is if he had in mind that it's not kosher, but rather chulin, maybe all it is kosher, but ain't merasa. Maybe what it is fine. It's still maybe what Rav means is kosher, but it's not merasa, it's not accepted for the owner. So in other words, we said at the beginning of the sefer that if you had in mind chulin, that if you had in mind the chata, said it was a different korban, then it becomes completely possible, and we said he stops things right there, and you take it out and burn it, because it's a completely possible korban.
It was?
We said that a chassas is one of the two korbanos, the Pesach being the other, where Shinui Hashem makes it completely possible, as opposed to, we said, all the other korbanos, Ola and Shlomim and Osham and so forth, if you shechted them with a Shinui Hashem, we said they're kosher and they also abide them. Maybe what Rav here means is, if you shecht the chassas L'Shem Cholin, then it's similar to shechting other korbanos L'Shem another korban. It's the same as Shinui Hashem. Shinui Hashem would apply if you have in mind a different korban. But if you had in mind that it was chulin, then Rav would say it is kosher, that but ainu merasa. In other words, what we would have is as follows. In other words, what Abaye is arguing is you have three possibilities of a chassas. You can have your shecht of l'shma, and then it's of course it's a chassas and it counts for the owner. You can have your shecht of chassas l'shem chulin, and then it's kosher but loy also l'bayim. And then you could have your shecht of chassas l'shem oil or something else, and then it's completely possible. So maybe that's what Rav means, as opposed to then other korbanos, where Shinui Hashem doesn't counsel them. Come sit closer. You don't sit all the way back there. But other korbanos where Shinui Hashem doesn't counsel them at all, where all you have is also a violin, then by them you only have two levels. If you shech them l'shem some other korban Shinui Hashem, then they're kosher but not oil of a violin. No, they're not. They're kosher but not merasa for the owner. Another korban, an osham, an oila, shlomim, etc. If you shech them shalol l'shman, we said they're kosher but not oil of a violin. And if you shech them l'shem chulin, then they would be completely kosher. Maybe that's what Rav means. And indeed, that is how that is how the Rambam paskins, that when we say that a chassas that's shechted shaloi l'shma means that it was shechted having in mind that it's some other korban. If you shecht, then it's possible. If you shecht it l'shem kolin, then it's kosher v'loi also l'bayim, and Abaye is suggesting over here. Okay. Amr of Allah,
that's
Allah. Amr of Allah, chassas shechted l'shem kolin m'shera. Now, Rav Elazar says, here's another nuance in it. Here's another nuance in this thing. Chatas sheshachta l'shem cholin k'shera. If a person checks the chatas, having in mind that it's cholin, which means, in other words, Rashi says that he knows that it's a chatas, but he checks it having in mind that it's cholin. In other words, he knows perfectly well what it is. He's not making a mistake, but he checks it deliberately having in mind, I'm checking this as cholin. Then we said, ain't chulin mechalim kosher. We said that's not able to be mechalal it. So it makes it fine. It's kosher below all for the Bible. But mishum chulin psula. But if he has in mind that it is actually chulin, meaning he actually mistakenly thought that it was chulin, then it would be possible. And the reason for that is not because of the idea of chulin mechalim kosher, because we said they can't, but because of a different issue, because you need a certain minimum machshava when it comes to shecht and korban. Yeah.
How does Rashi know the Shem Kulin and Yishum Kulin mean what it says that they mean?
Because we're going to say in a second, Minayim on Mis'atif the Kodshim, Shul Kotul, and Mis'atif the Kodshim, that's what we're going to explain. So great. So L'Shem Kulin. So again, L'Shem Kulin, if he knows that it's a Chatas, but he's deliberately saying, I'm shechting this L'Shem Kulin, which is similar to Shini Hashem and Shini Bailim that we talked about before. With all the things that we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta and throughout, that we've talked about Shini Hashem and Shini Bailim, it doesn't necessarily mean that he made a mistake. Because that you have a concept called Akira B'Tos, the Gemara talks about in various places and chapters. If he mistakenly thought that it's a different korban, that doesn't necessarily passel it. The kind of thing we were talking about, the Shini Hashem, or Shini Bayim passels it, is where he knew what it is and deliberately said or thought different. So therefore, so that's what we're saying over here. If he knows that it's a chassas, But he deliberately says, I'm shechting it, saying that it's chulin, then we're saying that's not enough to pass over because ain't chulin. Mechalim kodshim, all that happens is it's not oila for the oath. But if he mistakenly thinks that it is chulin, then you have a problem called misasik the kodshim. Then you have a problem that he doesn't have the proper minimum level of machshava that there has to be when it comes to shechting kodshim. Misasik meaning like he, so to speak, like he's playing around. Like he's not mentally involved in shechting the korban. And that doesn't work. And we know that, as we find that Shmuel asked Rav Huna. Now Rav Huna is Shmuel's talent. So either he's asking him, like, to test him, or it may mean in some way to test Rav Huna. It may mean that Shmuel is asking Rav Huna in order to test him, because Rav Huna is the next generation, the Talmud of Rav. Or it may mean that Rav Huna over here might actually be, there was a Rav Huna Resh Kalosa who lived in the time of Rebbe, who was mentioned one or two places, in Shas, that might be the Rav Huna we're talking about. Be that as it may, Shmuel asked him, Minayim Misasik the Kodshim Shulpah. So how do we know that if somebody is Misasik, as we're saying over here, like he's doing it without Kavana, as if like just he's playing around or like doing something unrelated to Kodshim, how do we know that is possible? Shenema, v'shochat es ben abokor lifnei Hashem, because the Pasuk says you should shech the cow, the cattle, in front of Hashem, meaning ad shetei shchita l'shem ben bokor. Meaning that the shchita has to be having in mind that it is a ben bokor, which is the korban. So that's what it is. Tosfos, by the way, explains over here that you actually have a few different types.
It can be any ben bokor.
No, but in other words, it has to be the ben bokor that's being brought to the korban. So he has to at least be having in mind that it is a korban. If he doesn't even realize, that it's a korban, then that's misasik.
But beyond that, no.
Right. Now, Tosfos points out that there are actually a few different definitions of misasik when it comes to shechting that we find in other places in Shas. In Cholin, you have an example, Rashi explains over there that misasik means you're not even intending to do a shechita at all. You're intending to just pick up the knife, for example, and accidentally you shecht it as you're picking it up. Or you intended to throw it at the wall or something, and on the way accidentally it shechted an animal. Is that what the misasik means over here? Tosfos says that no, because in that case that would be possible even by cholin.
Right.
So therefore you can't say, you don't need a pasuk to say that's possible by kodshim. It would be possible as a shechita b'chlal.
There needs to be
at least a kavana for shechita, right. So Tosfos talks about a couple of possibilities. That's the point. In other words, it has to be that you had in mind that you're actually going to shecht an animal. It can't be, for example, that you were intending to throw the knife and accidentally an animal wandered by over there and have to shecht it. That would be possible even by cold.
When you put on stilling, do you have to have the kavana that it's stilling?
The pashtut, yes. In general, to a certain extent, we say mitzvah ain't tzrichas kavana. We say that a mitzvah doesn't always require kavana. But
so
one difference is, though, I mean, shchita is a mitzvah, but shchita is not a mitzvah chiyuvit. Shchita is what's called a mitzvah chiyuvit. If you want to eat meat, you have to shech. As opposed to trillin, for example, is a mitzvah chiyuvit. You've got to put it on. So therefore, there can be a certain difference where shchita was saying you don't need to be having in mind that you're shechting l'shem Hashem or whatever when you're doing kulin, but you do at least have to have in mind that you're doing a shchita and not just that you're throwing a knife and it happened to cut the end. Yeah, okay. Okay, so Tosfos mentions there's a couple of possibilities what mitzasik could be over here. Number one is what we just said, that he thinks that it's kulin and then it was. The other possibility, Tosfos says, is let's say you could have a person who intends to cut the simonim of the animal. He doesn't intend thereby to do a shchita. Now, in a certain sense, it's a psikration, literally, because shechting the simonim constitutes a shchita. But nevertheless, it is possible to have that in mind, that he intends to cut the simonim. He's not thinking in terms of shchita. By cholin, that would be okay, because at least he meant to cut. By kodshim, we're saying over here, that would be misasik and would be possible. Just having in mind to cut the two tubes would be to cut the two pipes. That would be good enough by cholin, but not by kodshim. And again, the other one over here is that he doesn't even realize that it's a korban, that he thinks that it's cholin. Okay. So Shmuel says to Rav Huna, Zubi Adenui, fine, this raya that you're bringing from the proof from the politics, the shachat that's been a bakar lifnei Hashem. We knew that already. What I was asking you is, where do we know that it's ma'akif? We have a general rule when it comes to kodshim, that just because it says something once in the pasuk doesn't mean it's la'akif. It could just mean it's la'mitzvah. So where do we know that it's la'akif? And if you don't have it in mind, then the carbon is possible. Amalei, so Rav Huna answers him, because the pasuk says elsewhere, later on in kodshim, lutzon chem tizbachohu, for your rotten, you should shecht it. Meaning, l'rotten means das. L'daitchem zvichu, it means you have to shecht, having das, that it is a carbon, and that you're actually doing, and that you're actually doing an act of shechita. So now we have it said twice in the Torah, because the shachat has been a bakar, and the son says bahu. Now we have it repeated twice by kodesh means laughter.
Right. Here,
das means again that he knows that.
More
right. It means that he's aware that it's a carbon. He intends to shecht it. It means he knows that it's a carbon. So again, he could be deliberately having in mind, but I'm still doctor going to have in mind that it's kolin. That we said is okay. The carbon is still kosher, just not merasa in the case of chasas. But if he doesn't even know, if he doesn't even have the das know that it's a carbon, or if he didn't even have in mind to do an act of shchita or to do shchita at all, then yes. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, she'ena machshava hilachas ela achar oy. We said in the Mishnah, the machshava that tassels a carbon only follows the machshava of the one who's doing the avodah. So in the case of the shechita of the animal, for example, if the owner has in mind something else, he has in mind shini hashem, shini bailim, the chutzos mana, chutzos koyma, any of these various things, nothing happens. If the person is shechting, if the person is shechting the korban, and remember, shechting doesn't have to be done by a kohen, shechita period of the zohar. If the person, anybody can shech. If the person shechting and has in mind one of, what? No, we're talking about the shechting the korban. Shechting a carbon, shechita k'sheira bizarre. What? Even a carbon that's eaten? I'm not understanding the question. Any carbon? No. If you were talking about a regular case, a person is offering a carbon. He himself isn't shechting it. Let's say he gives it to one of the kohenim or one of the other people who's there in the Beit HaMikdash to shech. That person, if that person has in mind shini Hashem, or shini Bailim, or chutzos manu, or chutzos b'koyim, or what have you, then it will pass all the carbon. But if the owner himself thinks that it's a different carbon, or he intends to eat it, chutzos manu, or what have you, nothing happens. That's what we're saying. It only goes according to the oivet. It only goes according to the one who's actually doing the avoda of the carbon. What do you mean, even kafara?
Basically, the guy who offers the carbon doesn't he intend to have kafaras from it? Does he have it or not?
That's a good question, actually. Okay, maybe that not, because then it's called mevayis, that's all, but he doesn't believe that the korban has any effectiveness. Maybe, okay, that. But ordinarily, the machshavas that we've been talking about, other than that, yeah. Okay. I'm going to point out, masnissin deloiki haitana. Our Mishnah, therefore, does not follow the opinion of the following tanya. The tanya, omer of Allah's of Rav Yossi, shamaiti shabbailim mefaglim. I have heard from my Rebbeim that the owner is capable of making the korban pigle. If he has in mind that he's going to eat from the korban, chutzos manai, then Rav Elazar Rav Yossi says it will make a pigle. Now, so they have those...
What's the question?
Well, there's not a question, it's a statement. Our Mishnah, therefore, when it says, Eina machshava hilachas ela achar oivet, our Mishnah doesn't go like Rav Elazar Rav Yossi. The Gemara will do that. The Gemara will want to point out when a statement in a Mishnah is not l'chol el. Now, I mentioned on the WhatsApp before that there was a question that Rav Yosef Engel brings up, and I don't know if he's the first one to bring it up, but the question is as follows. If we're saying, according to Rav Elazar Rav Yosef, that the owner of a korban is able to make it pigle or possible, as the case may be, what about, he says, imagine, for example, the case of a soita. She's having, she's bringing a mincha, the mincha soita is being brought to the Beis Hamikdash, and it has to be dealt with like a regular mincha, it needs knissa, it needs halacha, it needs all the four avodas. According to the Chachamim, according to Rav Yossi, and then according to the Chachamim, who say that the owner can't make a pigle, fine, no problem. The only one who could make a pigle is the kohen. All four avodas by the mincha are done with the kohen. Therefore, unless he makes a pigle, you don't have a problem. But according to Rav Elazar Rav Yossi, if the owner is capable of making it pigle, what's to stop the woman from making it pigle, and therefore the whole thing won't work, therefore the whole maid soita won't work on her, because it only works after her korban mincha was brought properly. We're not talking about her, we're talking about the korban. The Kohen Bapashtos says, and what do you mean? The husband owns her in a certain sense because he was Kohen of her with Kedushin, but she's still her own person. What we're talking about over here, her Kohen. Doesn't she have the capability of making the Kohen Pigle? And if she makes it, making the Mincha Pigle. And if she makes it Pigle, then the whole thing is not going to work. So Rav Yosef Engel wrote a kuntres of about 160 pages with 80 answers, 80 lomdasha answers to this question. And then a number of other achronim in the last 100 years also got into the act and also come up with various other answers. He called this kuntres Gurus Shmoinim. Wait a minute. The question is a question. How is it, what happens if she makes the Kohen Pigle? According to the laws of Rav Yosef, that would work. Then the whole Mesoja thing doesn't work. So she could easily save her life. She knows she's guilty. She has in mind, while the Kmitza is being done, or while it's being walked over to the Mizbeach, or what have you, have in mind that the rest of it is going to be eaten, or burnt chutzlus manoi, make it pigle, and therefore nothing happens. So he gives eight... that if coins are below the Rav Yosi, that Shammai shall buy them a sideline, yes, because she's the owner of the carbon.
Is he the only one sitting like that?
Well, that's what we're saying in the Gemara, but he's the one. We're going to say soon that actually we have two other Tanoim who seem to hold the same way. Right? Okay, so I'm not going to give you all the answers, obviously, but among them are the fact that since the Kohen is doing, first of all, Rashi makes the point over here that even Rashi uses the expression over here that if the what we're talking about over here is if the Kohen didn't say anything but the owner had a thought of pigle, then according to the laws of Rav Yosef, it could make a pigle. So one of the answers, this isn't one of Rav Yosef Engel's answers, but this is one of the other answers from one of the other Achronim, is that very simple. Then in that case, Rashi is implying that as long as the Kohen says the right thing, then her saying differently is not going to undo that. Very well, all the Kohen has to say is doing each of the avodas, that he's doing it with the proper mashava, and then therefore she can't undo it. But aside from that, as I say, Rav Yosef Engel has many, many answers. He has 80 answers just of his own. Among them, his first couple of answers are because the Kohen is doing an actual maisa with it, and when it comes to the person who's doing maisa has the ability, has a stronger ability to do machshava, so therefore even if he does do it for shtika, even if he does say something different, his maisa is able to override that. Another answer is that the second answer is the fact that the avodas of a mincha, unlike the avodas of an animal korban, are all done by the Kohen. Unlike an animal korban, which is a cheder bazar, all four avodas by mincha have to be done by a kohen. Therefore, in that sense, he's not really her shliach, so to speak, and therefore she doesn't have the ability to be mefagalit. And then you have 78 more answers. In other words, according to that, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yosi would only say when we're talking about something where he himself could have done it, only by animal korban. Right. So yet another answer is maybe she and her husband are shuktim in it. And in that case, Ein Mefaglin Bachti Maser. That's another answer. That's another answer that's given, that maybe she and her husband are co-owners. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So you have Achronim of the last 100 years, ever since the question was brought up, have exercised a quite a bit of ingenuity in coming up with lumdish answers to answer what Rav Elazar Rav Yosi would do. Yeah, if she's not married, then she's not a soita.
In general, a woman can also fagel at any korban.
Why not? The pashtus, if she's the owner of a korban, according to the laws of Rav Yosi, she could be mefagel if she's the owner. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Amar Rav, my time is at the laws of Rav Yosi. Okay. So what's the laws of Rav Yosi's reason? Why does he say that the owner is able to be mefagel as well? Because the Amar Rav Hikriv Hamakriv. Because the pasuk says, when it talks about nesachim, the pasuk says the hikriv hamakriv, the one who offers his korban, should offer nesachim with it. Therefore, we see that the one who's bringing the korban, the one who's bringing it to the Beit HaMikdash, can be called hamakriv, not just the one who actually does the avodas of it, but also the one who brings it in the first place. Therefore, when the pasuk says hamakriv oseh lo yechashev, which is where we learn the whole concept of pigle, then that could mean also the makriv means the one who originally brings it to the Beit HaMikdash, the owner of it. So that's where he learns it. No, so that's where he learns it. Not really a hekesh, it's more like a gilui milsa ba'alma. You should know, what is the definition of hamakriv? It means, as we see from Parashas Nesachim, and it means the one who actually brings the korban to the Beit HaMikdash. Not just the one who does the actual four avodas of it. Okay. Amar Abaye, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, kulu sviru lehu zemachashiv zeh oved havi machshava. These three tanoim all hold of this concept that you can have one person having a machshava, you can have a different person doing something, and nevertheless that machshava has effect. And the fact that we're saying that the Goyim bring in many places in Shas, whenever you have, and you have a number of places in Shas where Abaya and sometimes other Amoraim point out that you have a number of Tanoim following the same line of thought, that kind of thing is called a Shita. And the halacha, the rule is, Ein halacha k'shita. The halacha is not, when we say that there's a list of Tanoim who hold a certain way, it amounts to saying the halacha is not like that series of opinions. The halacha is rather like the Chachamim who disagree with that. In other words, effectively what Abaye is saying is only these three Tanoim hold that way, but implicitly all the other Tanoim hold differently. And therefore we go like that. So what are these three? What are these three statements? Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi, Hadam Maron. We said what Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi holds, where he says that the Kohen can be doing the Avodah, meanwhile the owner is having in mind the thought of people, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi is saying that takes effect, and the Kohen becomes people. Rabbi Eliezer, where do we see Rabbi Eliezer holds of this concept? The Tznan, because we learn in a Mishnah in Cholin. Hashoichad la'ovid kechavim, if somebody shechts an animal for a goy, so the animal, in other words, belongs to a goy, and he brings it to a yid, shechts it for him. Shitofik sheira, then the shchita is kosher, because no problem, as long as the yid doesn't have in mind avodah zarah, then it's not a problem. But Rabbi Eliezer postal, but Rabbi Eliezer says it's postal, because he holds stam machsheves ovid kechavim la'ovid kechavim, that in general, we assume that a goy has thoughts of avodah zarah, and therefore it means that, and therefore, so his machshava, he being the owner of the animal, he is able to passel it, he's able to make it considered tikrovis avodah zarah, or if not tikrovis, then at least that it was shechted for divchei mesim, and therefore that's also, So we see the same line of thinking. In other words, that you have the yid shechting and the goy thinking, and Rabbi Eliezer saying that has an effect. I don't know. Okay. All right. I mean, fine. I mean, the fact is, the halacha is not according to the shita. The fact is, the halacha is that it has to be the ovid, the one who's actually doing the avodah, is the one whose machshava makes the difference. He was saying that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi, and Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Shimon Elazar all say that somebody else, the owner of the thing, is able to have a machshava that passes it. Again, in halacha k'shita, the halacha is not like that. But, okay.
The halacha is the ovid.
Rav Shimon Elazar, where do we see Rav Shimon Elazar holds of such a concept? Ditznan, we learn, Tanya actually, we learn in a Mishnah or a Braita in Shabbos, Klal Omer Rav Shimon Elazar. Rav Shimon Elazar set a rule as follows. Now in general, in Hilchas Shabbos, you have, in order for somebody to be chayav for carrying on Shabbos, it has to be that what they're carrying is something that has a use. So it has to be an object that's useful, and it has to be a minimum amount of it that's useful. In order for a person to be chayav chatos, as a skiller or what have you, for carrying on Shabbos, for doing the malacha of hitzav achnos on Shabbos, it has to be that they're carrying something that has a use and an amount of it that has a minimum use. In the Sefer Shabbos, you have the end of the seventh parak and most of the eighth parak and the second half of the ninth parak and the beginning of the tenth parak of Shabbos all deal with these dinim. That with different kinds of things. What is the minimum amount of them that a person is going to be chayav, kores, or chatos, or what have you, for carrying on Shabbos? We're not saying, first of all, it's not that you're allowed to carry less than that. Chatishir also. Now, you have machlokas in Yuma, whether chatishir also in Atoro, or Midrabanon, but either way, chatishir is definitely also. What we're saying is, in other words, for a garbage can is something that has a use. It has a usefulness. But in other words, to take one of the examples that it mentions in the Mishnah over there, let's say. So it mentions over there that if a person carries out a piece of paper on Shabbos, the paper has to be big enough to write what's called kesher moichsin, a receipt that the tax collector would give you when he collected taxes from you. A piece of paper smaller than that, a piece of paper, say it's enough to write two large letters on it, is the way the Gemara defines it. A piece of paper smaller than that is not a piece of paper that normally has any use. So a person were to carry out on Shabbos a piece of paper smaller than that, they wouldn't be chayav skill or a chatas or what have you. They'll be awful with a chatishir also, but it wouldn't make them liable to penalty. However, now Mishnah over there, Shabbos talks about that if you have a person who, let's say for example, you could have a person who for whatever reason, he decides that even a smaller piece of paper than that is important to him. So he decides to put it, he decides, takes it just a tiny piece of paper and put it away, and then he goes and carries it out on Shabbos. He will be chayav stealer or what have you for it, because for him it's something significant. Actually, he considers it to be something important. However, if somebody else were to carry out that same tiny little piece. However, if somebody else were to carry out that same tiny little piece of paper, he wouldn't be. He would be possible, right? Now comes Rabbi Elazar, comes Rabbi Shimon Elazar and says, like, Klal Omer Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Kol She'ein Kosher Lahatnia. If you have something which is not normally set, it's not normally hidden away. It's something that in and of itself has no use. And the Gemara gives an example over there of something that Rashi brings examples over here, actually, from the Gemara over there. For example, Dam Nida. A normal person is not going to throw away a cloth that has Dam Nida on it. There's no use that you can use with it. Or another example would be something that's also Bahana. So if you have something that ain't kosher lasnia, people don't normally store away, the ain't lasnia in kamayu, or it is something that is normally stored away, but it's smaller than the shear. For example, again, a piece of paper that's too small for a kesher moksin. But now suppose, again, you have one particular person who, for whatever reason, does decide to hide, to keep such a thing by him. He does decide to keep by him dam nida, or a tiny piece of paper, or what have you. Now somebody else comes and carries that thing outside on Shabbos. So Rav Shimon, Elazar says, the second person is going to be chayev, kareis, a skiller, or what have you, because of the machshava of the first one, who considered to be important enough to store away, to keep.
He said he was transferring his machshava
to the other person, exactly, right. So that's what we see, therefore, that the Uyvid, you have Reuven hid it away, having in mind that this tiny piece of paper is important to him. Shimon carried it out, and Rav Shimon Elazar is saying Shimon is chayev based on Reuven's thought. As opposed to, again, the Tanakama over there, the Halacha, the Chachamim there say differently. The Chachamim say Reuven himself will be chayev if he carries it out. Shimon will not. But we see Rav Shimon Elazar holds this way. So we see that, yeah. Reuven is the one who thought that I decide this tiny little piece of paper is important to me and I want to keep it.
Shimon is
some person who then goes into Reuven's house and finds this piece of paper and carries it out on Shabbos.
So
He will be right. So according to Shimon Elazar,
and doesn't do anything, but Shimon does the shkita and he
makes the korban table. Right, so here, what it is because Reuven, the owner of this piece of paper, because he's the one who stored away this piece of paper, and he now had in mind that it should have significance, therefore that's enough. His achshavei makes it that Shimon will now be chayav chatos for carrying it out on Shabbos. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara points out, when we say that we have this shitta, we have these three tanoim who all have the same basic underlying idea, would they all necessarily agree with each other's din? So let's see. Tavayu Islahud Durablaz of Rabbi Yehuda. Now both Rabbi Yehuda regarding shechting chulin for a goy, and Rabbi Shimon Elazar regarding carrying on Shabbos, both of them will agree with Rabbi Elazar of Rabbi Yehuda's din that they would say that it also applies to kodshim, to being able to make kodshim table. Because we would say hash the bachus amrinin b'fnim mivaya. Because if they say that this concept applies even not to korbanos, then needless to say it all applies to korbanos. Because the whole concept of machshava being something important, we learned from a pasuk before in connection with kachim hamakrim. So therefore, they will say there's no question it applies to kachim. We also hold that it applies to chulin and also to Shabbos as well. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi left Lahuda Tarvayu. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi does not necessarily have to agree with the other two opinions regarding shechting for a goy and regarding carrying on Shabbos, because he could say the other way around. The Dilba b'fnim hu daminin b'chutz la'aminin. He would say yes. When the pasuk says hamakriv, that it means that the makriv, who again means the owner of the korban, according to him, is able to be mefagel the korban. Maybe that means only by korbanus, not by any place else. Bifnim, only what takes place inside the Bifnikash, not things that take place outside the Bifnikash, not shechting, Bifnim doesn't mean inside the Hechel, Bifnim means in the Bifnikash, as opposed to outside it. So it wouldn't necessarily apply to a yid shechting of an animal for a goy, and it wouldn't necessarily apply to carrying on Shabbos. That's the Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi may hold that, but he doesn't have to. What about Rabbi Shimon Elazar? Rav Shimon Elazar is plays Rabbi Eliezer. Now, what about Rav Shimon Elazar, who's the one who said regarding Shabbos? So he'll say like this. He does agree with Rabbi Eliezer that it also applies to a yid shechting on behalf of the goy. And the logic is, hashtag, Shabbos amrinan, babadis yichavim mebaya. Because if he holds that it applies even by Shabbos, then needless to say, he would say it applies by Avodah Zarah. Why would that be? Because where do we learn a number of the dinim of Avodah Zarah? We learn from Lahavdil, the way things are done in the Beit HaMikdash. We learned in Sanhedrin that you have that the same kinds of things that are done as the avodah in the Beit HaMikdash, for Hashem. Lahavdil, those kinds of things, if a person does that Hashem avodah zara, he's chayav tefila, or chatas if it was b'shogeg. So we have a certain similarity in that sense, a certain parallelism between the avodah in the Beit HaMikdash and avodah zara. Therefore, we're saying he would have to, of necessity, agree with Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi about Pigul, then he would also have to agree that this concept of one person doing the Avodah and the other having the Machshava would also apply to Shechting on behalf of a Goy, because there the issue is Avodah Zarah. So as long as we accept Rabbi Elazar's premise that Stam Machshavas Goy L'Avodah Zarah, then we will have to say that the same din would apply. Since it applies to Kodshim, then it has to apply to Avodah Zarah, which is in that sense similar to Kodshim.
You believe that whatever applies...
Because the whole concept of Shechting for Avodah Zarah being also in the first place, we learn from a comparison, from a Hekesh, with the Avodah in the Mishmikdash. The only things that are done Lashem Levavai are things that a person is Chayev Tefila or whatever for doing for Avodah Zarah. That's why we said in Sanhedrin, for example, a person is, let's say, not Chayev for kissing a statue, unless that's a Derech of Avodah. Because kissing is not one of the Avodahs that's done b'fnim. But on the other hand, Shechting a Korban is, sprinkling things is, bowing is, they used to bow in the Beit HaMikdash, of course.
When did they bow?
At different times. First of all, we have every year, besides that, during the year also, for example, when the Kohen would say Birkas Kohen every day for the people, then they would also bow down when Hashem's name was mentioned. Yes. Bechlal, you have someplace else in Shas, I don't remember where, maybe in Menachos, I don't remember, but Gemara talks about the concept, a Kohen's not allowed to go into the Heichal for no reason at all. But a Kohen is allowed to go into the Heichal for the purpose of bowing to Hashem. That's considered an avodah. What do you mean you don't understand? A person is able to shech the korban for Hashem. A person is lahavdil able to shech the korban for Avodah Zarah. And he's chayav stila if he does.
The definition of
tzuris. What? Yeah. The definition of what does it mean, the tzuris of Avodah Zarah, is you have those four basic avodahs that if a person does them for Avodah Zarah, regardless which Avodah Zarah, he's chayav stila or chatas or whatever for it. Namely, dibuach, kitur, nisuch, and ishtahava, shechting, burning, pouring out something, or bowing, because those are four things that are done lahavdil for Hashem in the Beit HaMikdash. Aside from that, with every avodah zarah, you have the unique way that avodah zarah is through, called kedarka, where a person is chayav for that as well. Poyer lepa'er, throwing a stone to miracle, etc. But that's a certain way. But in other words, the point is, even let's say nobody in the world worships Pa'ur by shechting here, let's say. Nevertheless, if a person shechts an animal in honor of Pa'ur, he's still Oved Avodah Zarah and it's still Chayav Tefila. We learn that from Zeveach Le'elokim Yochram, Bilti Lashem Levado. So we see from that that there's a certain similarity between the Avodah and the Beis Mikdash and Lahavdil what's done for Avodah Zarah. Therefore, going back to our Gemara, if Rav Shimon Elazar holds that this concept of one person doing at a different, but somebody else had the machshava, and the person who did the action is chayev, he says that applies by Shabbos, we said already would agree with Rav Elazar Rav Yossi that applies to Korbanos. Therefore, of necessity, he would say that it applies to Avodah Zarah as well. What about, on the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer, less played the Shimon Elazar. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer, who holds that it applies to Avodah Zarah, in other words, for a Yid Shechting for a Goy, he does not necessarily have to agree with Shimon Elazar that it also applies to Hilchos Shabbos. Because he could say, Dilma b'Avodah Sechavim hu d'Amrit ke'en b'fnim, maybe only by Avodah Zarah do we apply this concept, because again, Avodah Zarah is in that sense similar, compared to the Avodah in the business. So if you're telling me you have a concept that one person doing the avodah and a different person doing the machshava is affected by kodshim, then you can say the same thing would apply by avodah zarah as well. However, avodah shabbos, but shabbos is a whole different ballgame. Melechas machshavas osra torah. We know the general rule that the torah only after is by shabbos melechas machshavas, because that we learn from the hekesh with the mishkan that the Mishkan was done with Melechas Machshavas. They think carefully, they plan it carefully. Therefore, Shabbos is the same thing. So therefore, over here, So now over here, again, Shimon, who's carrying out this tiny piece of paper, he doesn't realize necessarily, or he doesn't think himself that it has any chashivos, because he's not Reuven who decided that he considers it to be important. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer does not have to hold, like Rabbi Shimon Elazar, that would be enough to be mechayim. For him, it's not melechus machshev. But therefore, Rabbi Eliezer could disagree with Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Rabbi Shimon Elazar would say that Shimon is going to be chayev chatos because Reuven put aside this piece of paper. Rabbi Eliezer does not have to hold that. Rabbi Eliezer could hold like the chachamim that only Reuven himself, who has the machshev, would be chayim for it, but not Shimon, who didn't have that machshavas, he only did the malacha.
And that's because?
Because, again, malachas machshavas also charitable, because by Shabbos you have a specific thing that you need a machshava in order for the chal. When it comes to malachas of Shabbos, if a person does malacha kimis aksis, like just playing around, for example, if he doesn't have any intent to do a malacha, then he's caught. Again, it's still also the thing. Yeah, so whatever. The point, I mean, again, a person still has to be careful. For your other more lawyer than after all, a person is still responsible to be careful. But the Torah does not make a person chayav for stila or chasa, so what have you, unless he intended to do a malacha. And here, Rabbi Eliezer can argue, as the Chachamim argue, that he's not intending to do a full-fledged malacha because this is too small a piece of paper to be choshuv enough to have any use. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Elazar would disagree with that. Rabbi Shimon Elazar would say again that I'm learning from Kodshim. If it applies to Kodshim, then it applies to Shabbos as well. One person's machshava is able to affect the other person's mindset.
Kodshim, it's a very, very
huge. Okay, but he said he would. Kodshim is different.
Both there.
Fine.
Both see what's going on.
Okay. First of all, one second, slow down a second. Who says both of them are there? You know, it is possible for a person to be living out of town and sending a korban to the Beis Hamikdash. Ideally, a person should be there when their korban is brought, but it's not necessarily they always are. And the pashtus, they'd still be able to be mepagel then. But not necessarily are they actually present. Be that as it may, and it doesn't matter. In Rabbi Elazar of Shimon's scenario, even if let's say Shimon was told by Reuven, I consider this tiny little piece of paper to be important, that wouldn't necessarily, if one's the Chachamim, that wouldn't necessarily be Mechayev Shimon anyway, unless Shimon agrees, you know what, I agree, this is taka a significant tiny little piece of paper, let me go carry it out on Shabbos, that would be Malachas not Shabbos. But if not, if he doesn't have to agree with Reuven, and if he doesn't, even though he knows that Reuven set it aside for a purpose, that doesn't necessarily bind him. Yeah, let's say.
Because
we say Malachas Machshavah also Charda, and Malachas Machshavah means the one who does the Malacha is the one who has to have the Machshavah, whereas Rav Shimon Elazar would disagree with that premise. He would say that just like by Kodshim it works, that one person has the Machshavah and the other one does the Maaseh, and it works, so would it be by Shabbos as well? Okay, we have. Hadron Aloch Beis Shammah. So now that we've spent four prokin dealing with things that can pass on Karbonis, now we got to start talking about, okay, so what did we, our last mission to have, what we're supposed to have in mind, now we got to start talking about the actual procedure that's done to bring each of the korbanos. That's going to be the subject of this parak, and the next parak is going to be the actual procedures of what's done with korbanos. Ezer Mekorban. Now, we know we say this parak every day, and in Shulchan Aruch it brings a couple of reasons why. Number one is we know kol oisik v'toras oila kiluikuv oila, and the same thing with the other korbanos. So the person learns the halachas of the korban, it's the equivalent to bring the korban. So our parak summarizes the halachas of all the korbanos. So therefore, in that sense, it's considered as if we brought them.
You imply the opposite also?
What?
The one who doesn't is as if he never brought a full korban.
I don't know, but the fact is, nowadays we don't have korbanos to bring until Mashiach comes. So therefore, one of the ways in which we accomplish what we're supposed to, we say every day in davening, Ribbono Hayolam, Olam, Matzah Tzibitzanu, but we can't bring korbanos, Shehayis, and so we ask, Shehayis, Yam Tzibitzanu, Kashrut Mekorban. That what we're saying should be the equivalent, should be counted as if we brought the korban. So that's one reason why this parak, because it summarizes the dinim of the korbanos, therefore it's considered as if we brought the korban. Matter of fact, actually, in many sedurim you can find that before some of the Mishnayos and the Korban, they actually have a short Yehid Rotzen. For example, before the Mishnah, Ha'ola Kodesh Kadoshim, you can find in some Siddurim, they have a little of one line. Yehid Rotzen Mofanach HaKili Krabti Ola. Yehid Rotzen Mofanach HaKili Krabti Shlomim, etc. We don't have that in our Nusach, but no, before each of the individual Mishnayos, some of the individual Mishnayos in Ezer Mekorban. So that's one idea behind it, is that we say this terek in order that it should count as bringing the korbanos. Another idea is that we know the Gemara tells us kiddushin that you're supposed to have, that a person is supposed to la'olim yishalosh adam shnoisav, a person needs to divide their time into three, as far as learning Torah, a third from Mikra, for Tanakh, a third from Mishnah, and a third for Gemara. So this way, learning the Mishnayos of Ezer Makoyman counts as Mishnah. So this way we say the Sukkim of the Korbanos, that's Mikra. We say the Mishnayos of Ezer Makoyman, that's Mishnah. And we say the Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, that counts as Gemara. So that's only so you say them every day. So in Shulchan Aruch, it goes on to say you have to understand them, because when it comes to learning Torah Shabbat Peh, just saying the words doesn't count. With Mikra, even if you say the words without understanding them, it still counts as Limud HaTorah. With Torah Shabbat Peh, it's not so. You have to actually understand. Now, in addition, the Beit Yosef brings from the Ra'ah, who says that so we have 500 odd trachim of Mishnayos. Why do they pick particularly this one? So aside from the reason that it summarizes all the korbanos, another reason the Ra'ah says is because this perek, there's no machloikas in it. All the Mishnayos in this perek are all said without any machloikas, and in fact, so they use the later Rishonim and Achronim use the expression that it's halachal emotion we see that.
All of them?
Right. Now, the question with that, and actually, the Teferet Yisrael points out an interesting thing also. You know, later on in the Perek, we have the expression about the korbanos that are eaten. We say that they're eaten l'pnim min akloy. Now, what are the kloyim? The curtains around the Azara. So he argues that shows that the wording of our Perek, of the Mishnayos, may have to go all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu's times when there was a Mishkan with kloyim, with curtains around the Azara. Otherwise, why would he use the expression l'pnim min akloy? Or we say l'pnim min akloy, or in the Azara, or whatever. It's not a complete raya because the Gemara mentions elsewhere that when they were rebuilding the Beit Hamikdash, when they were rebuilding the second Beit Hamikdash, maybe also when Hordus was renovating it, I don't know, then they put up Kloyim temporarily. Right. So it's not a perfect proof. But on the other hand, though, the fact is when we go through the Gemara on our Perek, we're going to see that not everything in this Perek is unanimously agreed to. We're going to have a number of details of the halachas in this Perek that are actually the subject of machloikas. When we say about the Shirayim Imloy Nasa Ma'ike, we're going to discuss in the Gemara the Machloikas, whether they're ma'akiv when it comes to Chatoris Atminius. When we say at the end, when we say a Pesach, is that the Pesach is only eaten till Chatoris, it's a Machloikas, whether that's Midoraita or Midrabanan. When we say also Abchor Ba'Maisa Ba'Pesach, implying that all three of them, the blood is applied to the Mizbeach the same way, we're going to see later on Daf Nun Vav that that's the subject of the Machloikas as well. We have a number of details in this Perek that are actually the subject of Machloikas. So it's interesting, actually, the Beis Yosef quote the Ra'ah as using the expression that this perek kuloi ain't by machlokas. The Alter Rebbe, when he quotes it in Shulchan Aruch, changes the wording. He says perek zeh ain't by machlokas. So instead of perek kuloi ain't by machlokas, he changes it to perek zeh ain't by machlokas. So Rabbi Yisrael Pekarsky, Yalav HaShalom, and Sefer Chikra HaLachas points out it could be the reason why the Alter Rebbe changed the wording is, given that, as we're saying, some of the things in this perek are the subject of machloikas. However, the fact is the Mishnayos do not record those machloikas. The Mishnayos, as Rebbe composed them, as Rebbe wrote them, are written stam, without any machloikas. Then the Alter Rebbe carefully used the words that in perek zeh, ain't by machloikas. In the Mishnayos of this perek, they're attacking no machloikas. When we get to the Gemara, we see that there is machloikas involving some of them, but we don't find that in the Mishnayos of the, we don't find it in the Mishnayos of Perek Zeh themselves.
And that's because what?
Because that's how Rebbe wrote it. Again, yeah, the intent behind it was, again, it's supposed to be like halachal moshe mitzinai, that's supposed to be stated as just the fact, without machloikas. Definitively, right? There are, by the way, I've seen it pointed out, there are actually a couple of other prakim in Mishnayos that also have no machlokas in them. There's one in Me'ilah, there's one in Kinim, but again, you have the advantage with this one that it lists all the korbanos, and therefore in that sense you also have the advantage of kol ha'ozik v'torah sorry, by itself. Okay, so with all that, let's begin. Mishnah says, Ezel Mekoyim et Shol Zvachim, what are the places where the respective korbanos are brought? The Kodshe Kodshim are all shechted on the north side of the Azara. And they have to be otherwise they're possible. The north means is that we also have to deal with. We have three different possibilities what the north means. How much of the Azara is included in the north? So does it adapt to the side next to them, adapt to the area next to them is there, or also the side closer to the Heichal, or also the side closer to the to Shaul Nikmana, right? Okay, so we'll get to that in the Gemara, right? The Gemara is going to point out, by the way, you know, we say this every day. We never realize these nuances. Later on, when we start listing them individually, we say, for the various ones, Shkitas and Masafim, Bekimul, Domim, Bechlisharis, Masafim, why doesn't it start out in general? Ezeu, Mekoymet, Shalzvachim, Kodshe, Kodshim, Shkitas and Masafim, Bekimul, Domim, Bechlisharis, Masafim. Why not mention that detail? So we're going to see that in the Gemara.
Wait, say that again.
Why don't we say, Tarvis, Sarashim, Mekoymet, Shkitas and Masafim, Bekimul, Domim, Bechlisharis, Masafim. And later on, we say, Chatoris, Atsibah, Vayachid, also, Shkitas and Masafim, Bekimul, Domim, Bechlisharis, Masafim. When we're saying the general rule over here, kodshe kodshim shkitasim b'tzafon, why don't we mention that detail also? The kibbol domen b'chlishos b'tzafon. After all, that din applies on the face of it to all of them also. So the Gemara is going to deal with that point. We're going to have to see. We're going to have to see in the Gemara.
They would have to travel.
Hold on. We'll see in the Gemara why. Tosfos points out another nuance also. It says, when we talk about kibbol domen, it says that it has to be the klisharis. Why don't we say also shchitasim basofen b'klishare? Shchitasim b'klishare basofen. Why not mention that the shchita has to be done with a klishare? So Tosfos actually gets into a whole discussion. Does shchita actually require a klishare or not? For example, you have a Gemara elsewhere in Chulin that mentions that you could use a reed for shechting a korban. A reed is not something you can make klishare out of because klishare has to be made out of metal. So on the face of it, that means you don't need a klishare.
You mean? Not the
Mekabal, never mind the Mekabal, it's only the chef. The actual shit at night does not necessarily, does it have to be a klisharis on the face of... What? What do you mean? What? A klisharis, meaning a keli that belongs to the Beit HaMikdash and was sanctified for the purpose, made holy for the purpose of using for korbanos. The kli, for example, the Kabbalah Sadam has to be done in a mizrach, in a basin, which is a klisharis. It can't just be that you bring a basin from your house and receive the blood in it. It has to be a basin that belongs to Hekdesh, that was bought by Hekdesh or was donated to Hekdesh or what have you, and was declared to be a klisharis. Avodas and Mekadash, you use it for the avodah for the first time. Does the knife have to be like that? So Tosfos wants to say, Rabbeinu Ephraim says in Tosfos, maybe not. Maybe you don't even need a knife to chlal. Again, you could use a reed, for example, based on that Gemara and Chulin. And a reed definitely can't be klisharis. So Tosfos goes back and forth on that. Do you actually need a klisharis or not? The Rambam, when the Rambam deals with these dinim, the Rambam duly paskins indeed that you don't need a klisharis, that you can, in fact, you don't. You can, in fact, as that Gemara and Chulin says, you can use a reed or whatever you want. You do not require a klisharis for shchita. And therefore, that would explain why the Mishnah does not say shchitasam b'klisharis basofen, because the shchita taka does not need to be done with a klisharis.
Have you ever heard of anyone experimenting trying to do a shchita with a reed?
I haven't nowadays. Nowadays, I think it's pretty universal to do it with a knife, but, okay. All right, let's go on. We also need to mention, in Chassidus, in a lot of places, it talks in many, many Maimarim, it talks about the deeper idea of why, indeed, are Kodesh HaKodeshim shechted on the north side of the Azara Matzah. The north side, after all, is related to Gvura. Why are we associating it specifically with Gvura? And there's two major streams of thought that you have in Maimarim on the subject. One of them is, we usually associate Gvura with Tzimtzum, but that's what it's Gvura Milamaila. A Gvura Milamata, which after all that's what Korbanos are, is Halal Mimata Lamaila, is a Surah of the Wasata. Gvura, just the opposite, is associated with Gvura Tachayas, strengthening, with bringing out a more powerful Chayas. Therefore, for example, blood is associated with Gvura also, and the blood, Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh. So therefore, we gap the shecht on the north side when it comes to Kodesh HaKodeshim in order to bring out that greater chayus in Kedusha. That's one angle on it. The other angle on it is that Gvura also Gvura also leaves the possibility open for Chesedim to get involved. Therefore, we shech dafka on the north side to bring that Gvura into Kedusha in order to block off the flow to Chesedim. Paravis continues the mission. Paravis, by the way, there's also
the Dorum is what?
Chesed? Dorum is Chesed and Tzofen is Gvura, yeah. Tzofen to Pasach HaRoh, you have the expression in the Pasach HaRoh. Mizrach and Meir Rabbanan. There's also, by the way, a verse in the Baal Shem Tov that says that there's also kind of a, I guess you could say a little bit of a mustard dicker verse in it, that the Yetzirah, who is suffering, when it comes to kodshim, when it comes to tzaddikim, he has to be in a very sneaky way about it. She could tell them about suffering. How does he go about shechting them? By hiding out, suffering, meloshin hiding, and pretending to be something other than he is. As opposed to kodshim kalim, is b'chol makim. The Yetzirah can get you in. Continues the mission. Par v'sor shor yom kippurim, the par and the sor that are offered on Yom Kippur, shitosin v'sofer, and those have to be shechted on the north side of the Azara. The kibul dom v'klisharis v'sofer, the receiving of the blood has to be done in a klisharis, also on the north side of the Azara. The dom and tone hazoya al ben abadim, the blood of them has to be sprinkled between the poles of the Aron, or in the second definition, where the Aron wasn't there, then it's just in front of the Eben Shtia. And outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, on, or not literally on, but in front of the Parochas, and on the Mizbeach HaZahav, as we learned in the previous parak, four times on the four corners, and seven times on the top of it. Matana achat mehen ma'akadah, if even one matana was left out of all those 43, then it's ma'akadah, as we learned in the previous parak, Sukkim, that need all of those matanas to be done, otherwise the korban is possible. The remainder, what's left over of the blood, after he finishes with all those matanis, he pours onto the western yisod of the Mizbeach HaChitzon. Now, the Mizbeach HaChitzon, as we're going to learn later on in the parak, had a yisod running around only two of its four sides. It ran all along the western wall of the Mizbeach, which faces the Heichal. It ran all down the northern side of the Mizbeach, the side we were saying that you shech from Kodshim. It did not run around the south side, and it did not run around the east side. So Yisod Ma'arav means some place along that western side is where the Kohen Gadol goes and pours the blood. And the reason why Dafka that side, the Gemara side, I think the Gemara explains in our Perek, but the Gemara explains in Yuma anyway, is because he should do it on the side of the Yisod that he comes out to first. He just did 43 Hazoyes in the Heichal. Now he's walking out of the Heichal. The first part, the first side of the Mizbeach that he sees right in front of him is the western side. Ein Mavir Nala Mitzvah. Therefore, he should pour it on that side.
That's
in Menachos, maybe? I don't know. It's also in Yuma. Maybe it's also in Orpheric. I don't remember. Okay. All right. Okay. So that's why he pours it on the Yisod part.
Choose
no, but that's the point. No, the choice would be for him to go to the west side, or the choice would be he could go all the way to the southwestern corner where the stone sticks out a little bit, or he could go to the north side, or he could go to the north. He could conceivably go to the northeastern side where again sticks out an hour. But again, all those are further away. Ein Mavir Nala Mitzvah. Therefore, you should go to the first one that they found, which is directly in front of them, the western side. Therefore, he pours it on the western side. The Imlay Nasa Ma'ike, but if he didn't pour it on there, then it's not Ma'akev, because as we learned previously that according to the Chachamim, again, we'll see eventually in the Gemara that's actually Ma'akev, Panoyim, but the halacha is that pouring the Shirayim is not Ma'akev. It should be done, but if not, the Korban is still kosher. Continues the Mishnah. Purim and Yisrafim, it's worth mentioning, by the way, about the Shamshon of Paul Hirsch, where he explains what the deeper idea of pouring the Shirayim on the Yisoid anyway. He explains essentially what it is that the Yisoid, the base of the Mizbeach, represents the Yisoid, it represents the totality of the Jewish people. Like the whole Mizbeach comes upward from the Yisoid, so it represents the Jewish people in their totality. Pouring the Shirayim on the Yisoid represents the person brought the Korban, saying, up until now, my neshama was separated from Hashem and separated from the Jewish people because of the Aveira that I did, or because of whatever it is. Now I'm rededicating myself to Hashem, and therefore I'm pouring out my blood, my chayas, onto the Yisoid, representing that I'm rejoining myself to the Jewish people.
On each part of the Yisoid.
No, not on each part of the Yisoid. On one part of the Yisoid. The Yisoid is the Yisoid. But, the fact there are different parts, but they're all connected. It's one. It's an L-shaped thing that goes around two sides of the Mizbeach. Okay. Continues the mission. Purim and Yisrafim with Seir and Yisrafim with Shkitas and Basaf, right? Now, you have so far we've dealt with two of the five Katoris of Pinyas, two of Yom Kippur. Then you have the Purim and Yisrafim, the other Purim that are completely burnt, namely the Par Helam Gavashot Sivir and the Par Purim Mashiach. where also the blood of them is sprinkled in the heichal and the whole rest of the korban is taken and burned outside Yerushalayim. It's a good question. I don't know. Parim and Yisrafim or Se'irim and Yisrafim. So that's the parim. The Se'irim and Yisrafim would be the Se'iri Avodah Zarah, when Beis Din made a mistake and passed in mistakenly that some form of Avodah Zarah is mutar and the people followed it. So they bring a Sor as a korban, or actually one Sor for each Shevet, as we learned in Hurriyus. So those are Se'irim and Yisrafim. Those also, Shechitah and Batsafah, and those also have to be shefted on the north side of the Avodah. The kibul domer machlisharis batzapa, and again, the receiving of the blood also has to be done in a flisharis on the north side of the azara. The domon ton azaya ala parechas, the blood of them has to be sprinkled on the parechas, not bein abadim, that's only the ones being kippur. So the bedeez has to be sprinkled in front of the parechas, because the pasuk says by each one of them that he sprinkles as pnei parechas hakodesh, or as pnei parechas, the amizbah hazav, and on the mizbeh hazav. So with them you have, as we learned in the previous parak, with each of them then you have 11 sprinklings. With Yom Kippur, you have 43. 8 of the power in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, 8 of the Sor in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, 8 of the power in front of the Parechas, 8 of the Sor in front of the Parechas, 4 of the, then you mix them together, 4 on the 4 corners of the Mizbeah HaZahav, and 7 on the top. Total 43.
8,
4 and 7. In the case of the Parim and Yisrafim, the Seirim and Yisrafim, the other 3 Chatzaris of Pnimiyot, you only have 11. 7 in front of the parochas, not achas l'mayla v'sheva l'masa like on Yom Kippur, but only sheva, and 4 on the 4, and 4 on the 4 corners of the mizbeach hazav, so 11 total. Again, matana achas mehen me'akoves, again, if even one matana of those was left out, then it's ma'aktiv, and the korban is possible. Again, shiri ajama yeshev ha'yisod ma'arov v'shem mizbeach hazav, the rest of the blood he would pour on the western side of the yisod, because again, that's the first side that he sees when he comes out of that, when he comes out of the ankle. And again, the imlo nosam la'yikiv, if he didn't do that, if he didn't pour the shirayim, then it's not ma'aktiv. Eilu ve'eilu nisrofen bebeis adoshim. Both this and that, meaning the korbanos of Yom Kippur, as that we mentioned in Mishnah Aleph, as well as the other three, the parim anisrofim, the se'irim anisrofim, are all burnt in the Beis HaDeshen, in the place outside Yerushalayim where they would take the ashes off the Mizbeach. When the ashes on the Mizbeach, when the pile of ashes got too big, they would put it in a big pot and carry it outside Yerushalayim. That place is called the Beis HaDeshen. That is also the place where these 5 korbanos are burnt.
And that's in Yerushalayim? So nowadays it's in
greater Yerushalayim. Nowadays it's near Mei Sharon. But in those days it was outside the walls. That's supposed to be. Nowadays, both are outside. But whatever. The point is, nowadays it's in the built-up area of Yerushalayim, and those times it was an open, otherwise empty area.
Right. Me'asharim was up where there was an empty, open area.
So this is actually not in Me'asharim itself, but in the next neighborhood over called Beis Yisrael. But yeah. 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 His father's a Yerushalmi, you know. All right. Rashi points out, not by all 5 of these korbanos does it actually say in so many words that they're burnt in the place of the deshen. So actually what Rashi says is we learn it by a couple of hakashins. We learn that by the parim and nisrofim, it says, by the power helam dover and the power korin gadol, it says that they're burnt al shetach hadeshen, in the place where the deshen is poured out. The one of Yom Kippur, we have a hekesh to that. So therefore, that's how we get all of them. Tosfos, it gets into a law from the hekesh with the parim and nisrofim. Tosfos, though, gets into a question, though, that then you have a problem, because then we're going to deal with, in a couple of blocks, we're going to deal with the whole issue, that when it comes to kodshim, if you learn something with a hekesh, you can't relearn from that with another hekesh, which we dealt with briefly in the previous parak, and we're going to deal much more extensively with in our parak. In that you seem to have a double hekesh. You're learning the par helam davashal tzibur from the power of Kohen Mashiach, and then you want to learn the power of Yom Kippur from that. That doesn't work. So that gets into a bit of discussion over here exactly how we learn it.
One of them must not be together.
No, they're all kodshim, obviously. Uh-oh. They're all kodshim. No, but what it is is, no. But what it is among other things, is that it's not a hekesh so much as a gilui milsa ba'alma. Once it says by one of them that the place to burn it, mechutz lamachna, is al shefa hadeshen, then automatically it means by the other ones, when it says to burn them, mechutz lamachna also, then it also means in the same place, in the shefa hadeshen. You don't really need a hekesh for it, it's a gilui milsa ba'alma. It's just once it's said in one place, then automatically we understand that is the definition of mechutz lamachna. For a hekesh it would be that they're compared in the pasuk, just like this, so by this. Gilui milsa ba'alma is that it says something in one place, and we understand that it meant it's defined for us. What is the definition? And the chutz lamachna is al shefa hadesh. So the Gemara starts out. V'nisni nami v'kibul dom v'chlisharet v'sofin. In the first line of the Mishnah, why does it say kodshe kodshim shchitasin v'sofin, but it doesn't say v'kibul dom v'chlisharet v'sofin?
Yes.
The answer is, and it does mention it individually by each of the ones later. So the same, in other words, the question is, so it mentions chitas and batsafa in the line at the beginning and then individually by each one. But it only mentions kibul dom and roshei shoras batsafa by the individual ones, not in the first line. Manafsha, either don't mention chitas and batsafa by the first line either. Just say, ezel mechayim and shalzvachim. Don't say the line, kotcha, kotcha, and chitas and batsafa, and just sort of tell the story, shayim and shalzvachim, etc. Or if you're going to mention kotcha, kotcha, and chitas and batsafa, then also mention the kibul dom and roshei shoras batsafa. The answer is, kivin the ikka, sham the tzorda, because you have one type of kotcha, kotcha, namely the osham that a tzorda brings. Where the kibul dom and the yadhu, where the blood of it is received into the hand of the kohen, it's actually both, it's in a kli sharet and into the hand. Therefore the Mishnah left it out, because the Mishnah in other words can't say a generic statement, kodshe kodshim, kibul dom and the kli sharet basafen, which would imply the only kibul dom is done on a keli, because the asham mitzvah is kodshe kodshim, and the whole kibul of it is not done on a keli. The Gemara says, what do you mean, halai? You're telling me that it doesn't mention that there's a kibble of an asham mitzvah is in a keli? Well, katani lala, come on. Later on, when we get to the Mishnah about the asham mitzvah, it says, the kibble domen v'chlisho is batzafen. It says, well, katani, asham naziv asham mitzvah, shichasim batzafen, the kibble domen v'chlisho is batzafen. So it does say that it's in a klisho is batzafen. So it already says it there. Why does it say it over here? The answer is like this. Me'ikra sabar, when the Tana is first teaching the Mishnah, when the Tana is first teaching the Mishnah, he figures as follows. Kibul Dome Biyad. He figures that I'm not going to list it because the fact of the matter is an Asham Mitzvah is different. The blood is received in the Kohen's hand, as we're going to see soon. Therefore, Shiloh. Therefore, he left it out. And Shittim will come back to point out. It's not like he didn't know that it's also received in a cave. What it means is he figured you shouldn't list it as a general rule. Kodshe kodshim is kibul dom v'chlisharet v'sofen because you have that exception. The kibin delay sagule ela b'kli. But the fact of the matter is, you do have to have, even by an asham b'sarda, that there is also a kibul in a keli. Therefore, Tanya, therefore, mentions it specifically there. So in other words, the Tana does both. He doesn't mention at the beginning in order to that we should realize that there is a certain type of kodshe kodshim where the whole kibul was not done in a klisharet. But then he mentions it specifically later on, because the fact is that some of the kibul was done on the chart. So this way we have both. So this way we're meant to understand both.
But from the beginning of the Mishnah, we could think that since it's not mentioned, then it doesn't happen.
So now we understand. Since it meant so the Mishnah can't give us a general rule that all kodshe kodshim, the whole Kabbalah is the chlisharet v'sofen, because that's not true. You have the exception of the asham mitzvah. When it comes to the actual asham mitzvah in Mishnah Hay, where it lists the six ashamas, then it mentions it, because then at that point, we need to know the fact is if a kibul was not done in a kevi, the korban is possible. So therefore, you need both.
He receives the blood in his hand.
Detanya, as we learn in a blaster, the lokach. Now, when the pasuk says that the asham mitzvah, the pasuk says that he should take the blood. The lokach akayin midama hashem means yachol b'kli. You would think that he receives the blood of a keli, like usual with the carbon. No, tamad loyim of a nosam. Therefore, the pasuk continues that he puts the blood on the mitzvah's ear, thumb, and toe. Meaning, therefore, it's a hekesh. Ma nesina ba'atmesh o'koyen. Just like the pudding is done with the koyen's own body, because the pasuk there says that he does it be'es boy with his finger. Aflekicha ba'atmesh o'koyen. Therefore, it means the receiving of the blood also has to be with the actual koyen himself. Has to be, in other words, not with a clean shot. Now, Tosef points out that you have by a regular chatas also, it says the word v'lokach. But the difference is that, first of all, Tosef says by the Masorah, it repeats all the dinim twice. Once by the Masorah Oni, and once by the Masorah Osher, and the second time by the Masorah Oni, who brings somewhat different korbanos. So the fact that it's repeated again gives us reason to learn extra. Also, Tosef says another thing is by the chatas, when it says v'nosan, it says, when it says v'lokach, it says v'esbor. Obviously, Kabbalah can't be macabre blood with your finger. Therefore, of necessity, it means an occasion. Here, it just says v'loka hakoyim, which therefore we can understand it means that he received the blood in his cupped hands.
Well, you could have understood it also that the blood goes into the keli and he takes it out of the keli.
No, because that's the point. Then it would say then no, because v'loka hakoyim implies that he does it with his own body. That the original lakicha of the blood, the original lakicha of the blood, has to be with his own body. Okay, Yachol Acham is Be'achim. You would think maybe that also applies to the blood of the Asham that's going to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach. That should also be caught in the Kohen's hand. No, Tamad Lema, Ki Kachata Ta'ashamu, because the pasuk continues over there, that just as with the Chachas, so it is with the Asham, meaning that teaches us a Hekesh, Ma Chachas Tuna Kli, as Asham Tona Kli, just like a Chachas, the blood has to be received in a Kevi, so also an Asham, so also this Asham. So what is it? So is it that it's Ba'as Meshul Koyen, based on the word V'lokach HaKoyen, or is it an Akevi, because Kahat HaKoshim? In order to reconcile it, in Faith HaAsa Omer, it comes out as follows. You have to say as follows. And by the way, how do you know by Chassas itself that it means Akevi? Rashi explains, we learn that in turn from a Zeta Shava, from the Korban that was brought right before Matan Torah, where it says, Vayikach Moshe Chassi Adam, Vayosem Ba'agonis, that Moshe could pass the blood and put it in basin, so we see from that a Korban requires Akevi.
Agonis
is basin. So therefore, so we see that a Chassas, and then Korbanos in general, require a basin, require a Akevi. So the Asham also, so what is it, if we're saying, on the other hand, V'lokach HaKoyen, Nimfeita HaKoyen, so it comes out, you say as follows, Asham Masora, Shnei Koyanim Kalamas Dama. Two Koyanim to work together to receive its blood. Echad v'yad v'echad v'kli. One receives some of the blood in his hand. The other one receives some of the blood in a kevi. Yeah, well, the pastor's only in his right hand. The left hand probably is possible for Avoda, as usual. Zesh Akibla v'kli bala etam v'zeach. The one who received the blood in a kevi takes it over to the zeach and does the usual with it. Shtei Machana Shtei Nava. And the one who received it in his hand, Bola Yisra Masorah, walks over to the Masorah, who's standing over there in Shal Nikonar, and applies blood and dips in his finger and applies it to the guy's ear and thumb and toe.
So there's two
Kohenim involved, but the point is there's two Kabbalahs. Again, therefore, our Mishnah did not generalize and say, Kodshe Kodshim, Kibbal Domon B'Kli Sharif B'Sachman, because that would falsely imply that all Kodshe Kodshim, the only Kabbalah, is done in a Kevi, and we see the Asham Masorah is not. On the other hand, when it gets to the Asham Masorah later, the fact is it has to tell us there does have to be Kabbalah with the Kevi, otherwise it will be possible. So therefore, by saying at first not mentioning it and later on mentioning it, specifically, we learn implicitly what it says in this Braise, explicitly that you have two Kohenim, one the Kevi and one Biyah. Okay, so that's what it is. Yeah.
Did you, when you were going over the stuff, the Gemara of Kulin, where it says
the idea that you're using a reed only works according to Rav Yossi, maybe it only works according to Rav Yossi Ben Yehuda, who says that clay shards can be made out of wood. But on the other hand, maybe not. Maybe after all, the halacha is you could use a krumis shakana, and so that's what I'm saying. Tosfos kind of goes back and forth on it. Tosfos is uncertain.
The best proof in the world is that all the Jews coming for the Pesach brought their own knives. And they carried it by sticking it in.
Fine, you could argue, first of all, it doesn't necessarily say that the knives were all made out of metal. They could have also been pieces of sharpened bamboo or whatever, right? But besides that also, more to the point, anyway, fine. Obviously, other things being equal, people would rather use a knife. It's more likely to be sharp. You're less likely to pass through your carbon. But we're talking about what you could conceivably use.
What do you think?
It's not quite sharp. I don't know. They use knives, I guess. Why not? Yeah, well, for Mila, they use rocks. I say like a chayrit surim, but... But the famous thing that after David killed Goliath with a stone, where the iron of his helmet made way for the stone. After that, the iron passage developed the foot, therefore iron was those that from then on it's always used together. It says we're in Medrash that Goliath was wearing a helmet that covered his forehead, among other things. But David threw a stone, swung a stone at him, and what happened? How did the stone kill him? How did it go through the metal helmet? The iron moved away, moved aside to make room for the stone. So therefore, as a result of that, iron got the chutz that from then on only it is used for bris milah. Unlike before that, you find Yeshua used rock. Sephora used the rock also. As far as shitta, korbanos, again, I don't know that, you know, in other things being equal, of course you would use a metal knife, it's easier to use it, but we're talking about could you use a krumah shokana? So that depends whether you say that you have to use, well, that depends whether you say you have to use a klishoritz or not.